Talkers. I'm your host, Todd Lennox.
Taoist, Buddhist, Muslim, Jew, Christian, Hindu, chosen few, temple burning, atheism, burning man, paganism.
Those are just a few of the topics we will be discussing and the people we will be hearing from on Edge Talkers.
Dogs and rats, childbearing, those without, single, married, gangs and scouts.
Thank you to Matt Venuti for graciously letting us use his song, The Rhythm of Life, for our intro and outro. You can download this song and check out the rest of his songs and albums at mattvenuti.com. That's M-A-T-T-V-E-N-U-T-I. And indeed, in this rhythm of life, we are all in this together.
We're all in this, the rhythm of life.
And today's guest is none other than Matt Venuti, who wrote and performed the intro you just heard. We start out by Matt explaining what's going on with his tour during the time of COVID.
Well, I'm back in my roots right now. I'm back in Geneva, New York, which is where I was born and raised, and by accident, because of the coronavirus, I was here to visit, and I was going to be coming across the country to tour, and because of the virus and the situation that everybody canceled and had to cancel, I thought, gee, you know, I might as well just stay here and continue to plot along and maybe write some music and such. But yeah, I mean, my dad was a jazz piano player, not by trade. He was an amazing player, actually, and he played by ear, and all of his 10 kids had to learn piano growing up. It was mostly my mom's doing to force piano lessons on us, more or less. And I took them for maybe 5 years, 4 or 5 years. And you know, after a while, it just became too theoretical for me. My dad just played by ear. He just had this gift where he could just sit down and play just about anything. And it just came out of him. He never took piano lessons. The legend has it, when he was a child, he wanted to reach bigger chords, and you know, he had child hands, and so he would tape, or someone would tape popsicle sticks to his fingers so he could reach the bigger chords. And then as he grew and could reach those chords, he was way ahead of the game already. So
wow, I have not heard that trick before.
I don't, maybe he made it up, who knows. But he was amazing. So I wanted to be like him and not have to think about music so much and just play. But the piano was just, for me, it was a little too complex. So then I started playing the trumpet. The trumpet was a much simpler instrument. It's very physically demanding, but it was simpler in a lot of ways. And I just love that big fat noise that it made. Big shrill noise. I could play above everybody else, you know. So I got into playing the trumpet, and then years passed, and I walked into a nightclub in Boston, small place called Ryle's, and I saw a guy named Mike Matheny playing the a trumpet, and he was, you know, with a great band. His brother is Pat. Mike is equally a great player just on the trumpet, and all of a sudden at the end of his set, he pulls out this electronic valve instrument, EVI, I found that it was called. And he started playing this thing, and it just blew my mind. I was like, wow, it's this crazy gadget that he played with both hands, switching this little canister with his left hand while playing trumpet fingering on his right hand. And he was just doing some wild and crazy and cool stuff. And so I started dragging people. I think he played every Wednesday or Thursday night. So I would drag people along with me. And, you know, as jazz goes, you know, the club wasn't that full, but I was bringing like 10 or 15 people with me. So Mike had to start taking notice. He came and sat down with me a couple of times, and I was like, hey man, where did you get that thing? I really would love to get one. He says, well, my brother Pat got it for me, but in New York City, at a place called Sam Ash Music. But you know, they don't make them anymore. So I started to inquire with Sam Ash Music, calling them on a weekly basis. Hey, did you get one back? Is there anything going on with this thing? And they're like, no, man. It's like, they don't make them anymore, but if one comes back, we'll let you know. Well, months passed and I got a call and one came back. Next thing I know, I've got an electronic valve instrument. No idea how to play it. And so I just started to kind of figure it out. And over time, I started to be decent at it. And the company, Akai Corporation, decided that they wanted to buy the rights to be able to distribute the instrument from the original maker named Niall Steiner. He's the guy that invented this instrument. So he gave the distribution rights to Akai Corporation. And then I got the call from Akai because I guess they had gotten wind that I play this instrument. And they asked me if I would demonstrate the instrument around the country. So I started to play in these different places. I was in music stores in Hawaii. I was playing at the NAMM show in LA. I was playing at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs for the Air Force Band. I was doing all these demonstrations around the country with the electronic valve instrument. And that was really my first, you know, kind of professional gig as a musician.
And this, it's got kind of a tube on one end, and then there's some buttons, and you're basically blowing into it to create some kind of frequency, but the actual instrument converts your blowing. I mean, I don't know. I'm just kind of making this up. Tell me how it works.
Well, it's not too far off. It's really the instrument itself is a controller. So there's no sounds in the instrument. The original instrument did have a sound module that was hooked in with it. It came with a little tiny like suitcase that looked like maybe a flute would be inside of it. Well, you open it up and it's got a cord attached to this analog synthesizer that was really cool. And now the newer versions are, you know, Niall still makes, or actually I don't think he's still making them anymore, but he was making MIDI. We might get a little technical for your audience, but basically he was making MIDI instruments now. So that's musical instrument digital interface, which means that you can interface the electronic valve instrument with any other synthesizer so that you can play the sounds from any other synthesizer. But the instrument itself, the MIDI instrument, does not have sounds within it. It is just a controller that sends information, MIDI information to a synthesized module, which I have several of, to be able to play with breath expression any sound. And it's pretty amazing how you can make, a typical synthesizer sound amazingly real or expressive with this instrument.
Enjoy that music. And you do, is it that you do something with where you kind of, you record your tracks and there's like these subtle, or not so subtle maybe, but like these sub tracks that you build on? Is that, do you use the EVI for that, or is that another instrument?
No, I use the EVI for just about everything. I play bass with it. I even trigger drum loops, or even sometimes just make drum tracks with it. Because really with any recordable sound, which could be anything from a bird to a door slamming that can be recorded, you can sample and you can play it back in 8 octaves with the electronic valve instrument with or without breath expression, depending on how you want to access it. So yes, I don't always use the EVI. I also play a little keyboard. So, you know, sometimes I'll lay a chord down with keyboards and I'll have some kind of a drum pattern, something that I play with the hung, which is another instrument I'm sure you'll probably ask me about. But and I just layer things as any composer will do, multi-tracking on a DAW, which is a digital audio workstation, which is something that all composers pretty much use nowadays, which is, you know, in your computer. And I'll just layer track upon track and record that way. And I do a lot of video too. So I make a lot of music videos. So I'll record multi-track recordings and render that down to a stereo track, and then have multi-tracks of video that I'll edit with that music and render that out into a music video.
Yeah, and those are beautiful tracks. I mean, you are a one-man band in sounding like more than just a band, sounding like a full-on, you know, orchestra with Pink Floyd kinds of sounds coming out, and it's pretty amazing. I hope to share with my audience some of that multi-track music too. You got somehow introduced to the hong and some of these steel or alloyed instruments. Tell me how that happened.
Well, over time, when I moved to San Francisco and started my band, the Venusians, I played for many years, kind of the front man with the electronic valve instrument and as a vocalist too. But the EVI was really the main calling card that got a lot of attention. So we were playing a lot of major festivals, and we were hired for the Star Wars gala, George Lucas's Star Wars gala, when he was doing the prequel. And we were doing the a lot of big tech parties. We did opening parties for Google, for Yahoo, Microsoft, when they were just starting, and they just kept hiring us because they loved this kind of cyber pop band, the Venusians. And we kind of made a little bit of a name in the underground San Francisco scene back in the day. And then Burning Man came around, and we started playing out on the playa, and we got a reputation and playing big festivals then. And so I'm bringing this up because, you know, years and years of playing this electronic valve instrument, I started to crave something different. And I wasn't being called back to the piano and the trumpet. You know, I wanted something simple. Mm. I was dragging around this big sound module and a keyboard on stage and the EVI and, you know, blowing into the synthetic instrument, which I love, but it's not the most grounding of all instruments. And it's also very tweaky. So it's not like, you know, just sitting there and playing something real. It's like, you also have to be a mad scientist, which I'm not at Nate by nature. I had to kind of become a little bit of that to really appreciate the EVI. But there's a lot of tweaking. There's a lot of, you know, you get a sound module, and it's not like you just plug and play. You want to shape those sounds. So I'll spend hours upon hours, days upon days, weeks upon weeks, and on, just making the sounds work with the EVI and making my own signature sounds. So before you know it, you know, you're not really playing music. You're just sculpting sounds. Mm. And I wanted something where I could just sit and just play music and just walk into nature. Mm. So I started telling my friends, a lot of them play unusual instruments. And I just started putting the word out there. I really want something. And I had this Hansonic, which is it's a electronic kind of drum pad that is kind of round in shape. Mm. And you could play just about any kind of sound with it. And I had one in my studio I was borrowing from a friend of mine. Actually, Jane Heaven, who I think you guys might know. Anyway, she was a KPFA radio host, and she loved my band. And so she got involved a little bit with helping promote and such. So she had this Hansonic. I borrowed it from her. And I said, you know what I really need? I want something, an acoustic version of this instrument, something that I could put on my lap, you know, go out into nature. And I put the word out to my friends. Well, Jane didn't hear me say this, but she was out on the playa one year at Burning Man, and she saw this instrument, and she came back and she told me about it. And it was an early version of the hung. And I said, that's my instrument.
Wow.
I said, well, find out where it came from. So I kept bugging her, you know, like every week I'd say, hey, did you find it? Well, the word came back. They don't make them anymore. You know, it's like the same thing with the EVI, right? So I kept on pressing. I said, I really feel like this is my instrument. And so the word came back that it's called a hung. It's made in Switzerland. And I started to just kind of do some investigating. And it turned out that there was a guy in my neighborhood who had the very first Hung. And his name was Alan Tower. I looked him up and I found him and I said, look, Alan, I really would love to see this instrument and see it up close. So he invited me over his house. And then he, you know, he let me play it and he told me how to get it. And then I got in touch with a guy in New Jersey who was a distributor, and they got about 100 a year in the United States, and they had just started making them. And so I ordered one, and it was going to take about 4 or 5 months for it to come. But I joined this users list on Yahoo, Hung users list. And there's like maybe 15, 20 people on this list. So I was just kind of being a voyeur, looking at these things and watching people talk and, you know, having a conversation with people. And then somebody put one up for sale for like $450. Well, I had already ordered one. And I thought to myself, wow, could I possibly get another one? And buy? I think it was around the same price that the one I ordered, about $450. So I said, I want to buy this. Mm-hmm. And the guys sold it to me. And suddenly I had a Hung and I had another one coming. So yeah. When one came and I had two Hungs, I decided I was going to make an album. And I made an album called Dance of the Helix. I mixed the Hungs up with some of the EDI and some of my players in my band. And I sent the instrument makers a CD. And they got back to me and they said, geez, we really love this music. Why don't you come out and visit us sometime and send us some more of your CDs? We'd love to give some away. And so that's how it all started. I started making yearly visits to Switzerland and coming back with another Hung and a new generation of the Hung. And I just became crazy about this instrument. And I loved the way that they were, you know, the way that they developed this instrument over time, former makers of the steel pan. And then they decided to try something, you know, a hand played steel pan. They were a little bit inspired by a guy who played an udu, which is an African clay pot drum. And they thought, how could we marry the concept of the udu with the steel pan and play with the hands? And so they started experimenting with these different ideas. You know, the early Hungs were just these giant kind of orb type of things. And actually, there's a video of me playing the very first Hung. They call it Hung Baby. So I was in Switzerland. It's really a great, wonderful, bizarre thing. But so over time of me playing the Hung, I started to just kind of like change a little bit of my musical identity because I was really being drawn to this instrument. When Yolanda, my wife of 20 years, she developed ovarian cancer, and within 9 months she had passed. I didn't have any idea of what this instrument was really for me, what it was meant to me. But Yolanda, you know, she would encourage me to play an instrument that I brought back for her as a gift. I called it Yolanda's Hung. She said, I want you to play this for me now. And you know, she wanted, you know, it was really helping us both kind of get through this very difficult time. And when she passed, I would go out into nature with her instrument and just start to download what I call, you know, kind of songs, as I call songs from the rhythm of life. And that's where that album, the gist of that album came from. The songs and the lyrics came from going through a difficult time, but also, you know, trying to make sense of it and find a way through it by finding a way to access my own heart through the music. And then I realized that these aren't songs just for me. These are songs for everybody, because everyone goes through this. Everyone goes through loss. Everyone goes through change. And so I started to realize that I have a gift to give here. Through the difficulty of losing Yolanda, I also had something very special that I could share through this experience, and I started going on the road and playing these small concerts. Boy, am I skipping far ahead here?
No, this is great. This is great. So, I really enjoy it. I mean, I just want to interject this. I mean, I've listened to that album, and you know, every time I hear my own podcast, I listen to the song, and I really am moved, Matt. I didn't realize that you had written that after Yolanda had passed, shortly after. And it just makes it so powerful that.
Well, I'll tell you that there's a little sub story within this. you might want to hear it because it's, I think it's important. I did not write the Rhythm of Life CD right after Yolanda passed. It was a few years after. What I wrote was an album called Rise, which had a lot of those songs on it.
Yeah.
What happened was I was in the beginning of a 9-month tour and I was in Houston, Texas. This was maybe 3 years or so after Yolanda passed. And I had just recorded the, maybe 2 years actually. And I just recorded Rise and I had, I don't know, 1,000 copies in my van. And I went out to stretch in a park. I was staying with a buddy of mine and I went out to stretch at a park near his house. And I had my van full of everything. And I was really proud of myself because after Yolanda passed, I was able to just move everything in my life. And I had everything that I had been able to just kind of liquidate in my life in my van. I had everything that was important to me, video cameras, you know, laptops, recording gear, you know, just the right amount of, I got rid of everything else because I just felt like it was time for me to just be free of the most of the material stuff and just be able to just be on the road. Well, when I walked back to my van, everything was gone.
Oh.
Yeah. I opened up the van and I looked inside and my heart just sunk. And this voice shot through me and it said, this could be a moment of empowerment or embitterment right now in this moment. I swear, it was amazing. And I was like, well, I don't know where this voice came from. Later, I found, you know, I realized it must have come from Yolanda. Where else could that come from? And I said, okay, I'll choose empowerment, whatever that means. You know? And then relief came through me. As soon as I chose that, realizing that the most important things that I brought with me were in my friend's house, which were my instruments. Everything else, my laptops, my recording gear, my video cameras, my wallet, my passport. Now, this is the beginning of a 10-month tour, and I didn't even have ID now. So, and I'm staying in hotels and Airbnbs and things like that. So I was, you know, I managed my way through it. But every time I started thinking about, you know, wanting to, you know, destroy these people who mess with me, I would choose empowerment. And I said to myself, okay, there's a little gift in this somehow. So I went and did the rest of the tour. Some of it I did acoustically, but I finally, you know, was able to get some of the money back. You know, friends and or actually my family found out about it and they started sending me money and I was eternally grateful. So I bought my sound system back again and just the stuff that I needed. But I thought I would just order Rise again, you know, order that album again and just, you know, pick it up in another city and sell it because, you know, that was what I was selling on this tour. And I said to myself, no, because the concept that I'd thought about was every time I thought I'm going to get better instrumentation, I'm going to get better recording gear, I'm going to get better stuff to make it a positive in some way. And instead of just reordering Rise, I was going to redo it. And so I waited. Wow. I got back to San Francisco and I redid Rise. And I decided instead of having just me with the hung, which was what Rise was, just stripped down, very bare me with one instrument or two instruments, I said, you know what? These songs deserve a little bit of a little bit bigger stage.
Mm.
I'm going to bring in backup vocals. I'm going to bring in some of my band members. I'm going to bring in the EVI and I'm going to redo it and I'm going to put it out there and see what happens. I put it out there and it debuted at number 6 on the top 100 ZMR world music chart, world music, ambient music and new age music. And I thought to myself, well, there's, you know, making an embittered potential embitterment into empowerment. So that's the choices I started to make. And ever since then, I've thought about that. You know, whenever the difficult times come, I say, look, it choose empowerment instead of embitterment, and things always tend to shift.
Everything will be all right. limitation, no worries or age. Time is forgotten, you're free from the cage. Open your heart to the sky.
Such an empowering story to realize, just to hear you talk about opening a van. And it's a great story about, we can't always control what happens, but we can 100% control our response to what happens. And that moment of your life just really being ripped away, the things in your life, and then have that voice coming from Yolanda, who had also been taken from you, just that all coming together right there, and you responding with, I have a choice here, embitterment or empowerment. I mean, that is just, I mean, that about says it all, Matt, right there.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's good to remind myself, because I've been going through a little bit of a funk lately during this corona, this COVID-19, I'm still calling it corona. I guess we left that behind. The beer got its name back again. Thank
you. Yeah. Well, we had the other day, we had Taco Tuesday on Cinco de Mayo in the time of corona. So it's all some kind of, it's all some kind of Mexican restaurant plot.
Anyway, so it's good to remind myself to come back to that.
Yeah. Well, your music, your tour, any music, live performances, I mean, all that comes to a screeching halt. So it's understandable, you know, you're going through some changes at the least. Tell me what that's been like for you.
I'm in the last tier of what's going to open. What I keep hearing, certain things that will open. I just heard, who was it? I forgot. Oh, I think Gavin Newsom. I'm in New York right now, but
yeah,
I was listening to California is going to start opening things up slowly, but the very last tier is going to be assemblies, like, you know, music halls and things like that. So I don't know how long that'll take, and I don't know how that will affect attendance overall, even over the next year or two. Mm. I have no idea. So I'm trying not to panic, and, you know, I've gotten used to just being on the road and enjoying the freedom of being able to book performances wherever I want to. And I've grown to appreciate and love certain people around the country who are my hosts, who invite me in to play for their communities. And it's been just a lovely experience for me, all around the country. Mm. And now I'm back in my hometown. It's snowing. There's a snowstorm right now. Here we are.
Snowstorm in May.
It's the 9th of May, and there's a snowstorm.
I'm
thinking to myself, gosh, I think I might miss Florida right now. But not really, though. I'm in a nice, warm place, and I love being around my family. So I don't know, Todd. I'm not sure exactly what will happen after this, but I'm just waiting for the signal, waiting for the sign, and trying not to get too despondent about what is and what I can't control. So you're right. What I can control is how I feel about it. Mm. And as long as I can stay creative, then I feel good. And I've been posting things on Facebook and Instagram and a couple of Facebook lives, and I may do more of those, and I'll just continue to write little vignettes and entertain myself and hopefully a few others out there, and we'll see where this all goes.
Just speaking personally, I'm hoping we don't go back to normal, because normal wasn't all that great, but there's a lot of things that are missing now that we just can't live without. And music I think is one of them, you know, music, being with people, congregating, having conversations, you know, one-on-one with people and being able to, you know, see their whole body instead of them just enveloped in this rectangle on Zoom. All that is, I think, just critical to being a human. And music and concerts and live music and improvisation and all that, I mean, that's just, I mean, why even be a human if you can't experience all of that? And you're a huge part of it. I just love that album, Rise. I didn't know it had been reproduced. But, you know, it's just such a great album. The song Rise, The Rhythm of Life. I mean, those are like anthems for Rochelle and I. And I should mention, you know, I know you from Rochelle Gehring, who's my partner, and she introduced us. And I've had the privilege of being able to see you perform live and in our home even, which is like, oh my God, you know, Matt Venuti's playing in our house right now. This is awesome.
Rochelle means a whole lot to me. She's a true shaman. And she has, I started seeing her to learn about breath work. As you know, now I'm doing stuff with Wim Hof's method of breathing, which has been very, very good for me. But Rochelle introduced me to the whole concept of breath work and working with, you know, accelerating your breath and kind of coming to this holotropic breathing and getting into these states of deeper consciousness. And it morphed into other things. She was doing other work with kind of shamanistic work that really was important in my life. So I'm really grateful to her. And I think, you know, what I went through with her and the things that I've learned with this kind of work has really affected the way that I do music.
Well, yeah, she is a shaman and a medicine woman and a beautiful healer. And the breath, that's part of it too, you know. And of course, you use breath and singing and playing music. And wow, so yeah, and we share that Wim Hof method in common. I practice Wim Hof. I'm a huge proponent of his whole lifestyle and, you know, sort of living on the edge. And I haven't gone naked up Mount Kilimanjaro, but the breathing part of it is phenomenal. It's really, it's just
Yeah, and the cold. I mean, I used to, back in the day when I lived in Boston, right when I, you know, around the time when I met Mike Matheny and the EVI, I was swimming in Southie in Boston in the bay in the wintertime. You know, the water's ice cold.
Like, yeah,
you
know, that's cold.
Yeah, so, but there was a sauna right there. So I would jump in. Some of these old guys, though, would stay in for a while. I would jump in and stay for maybe 30 seconds and then run out and get in the sauna. Mm-hmm. But I remembered how invigorating that was. So when I moved to San Francisco, I joined the Dolphin Club and I started to swim in the bay every day. And that's cold. You know, I remember one time, you know, kind of just on my back, just in the bay, just kind of like floating along, looking up at the sky, and just, you know, you get used to the water after a while, you know? And so I just so relaxed and so high. And then I shook myself and I said, holy shit, I'm getting hypothermia. I swam to shore as fast as I could. And it was amazing. I started to fall asleep. And I realized, wow, that's why they say drowning could be peaceful, you know, eventually just kind of let go. But you know, I don't have a lot of fat on my body, so you got to be careful. But now I take cold showers after learning about this Wim Hof method, you know, the really cold shower. And out here, they're cold, man. Right now, in the wintertime, the water coming out of here is ice cold. It really does change something. It really does. When you face that, and I don't like to be cold. It's not something that I, you know, enjoy. But when I get in that cold shower, man, I feel so much like in the moment. There's nothing that zaps me in the moment more than being in that cold shower. There's no place else to be but right there, you know, in your head. And it's kind of like the breathing does that too. You know, it brings you in the moment. I think that's probably the most powerful part of it, is that you're in the present state. Yeah, that's a powerful place to be, because that's what reality is.
And it's actually, speaking of COVID-19, all of that builds your immunity. The cold builds your immunity, being out in the cold, taking cold shower, the breathing. I mean, what is this virus? It's all revolved around people's breathing and lungs, and having healthy breathing, healthy lungs, super important.
And the irony is that the COVID-19 apparently likes cold, but I don't think that somebody said to me, you know, I mentioned cold showers, like, well, COVID-19 likes the cold, so I'm not going to do that. But I think that's a little bit of a misrepresentation of what COVID-19 likes. I think that if you're putting yourself in that place of getting cold, you're actually building, you're right, you're bringing your body into more of a solid state when you bring your, you know, you have that cold rush go through you and all your adrenaline just starts to pour out and your cells just start to spin. And I don't know, there's a science to it. And I know that women, I should study that more before I start to talk about it. But anyway, they've studied him, and there's a purpose for making yourself cold like that. And it does build your immune system. And I think it will protect you from, you know, certain things that you may not be protected for. And it's kind of ironic because a lot of times people, oh no, you don't go outside, it's cold, you'll catch your death of cold thing. It's like, nah, man, I go outside now in a t-shirt in the freezing cold and I won't not worry about it. Mm. I'm fine. Yeah. Right.
Wow.
Now, knock on wood. We'll see what happens. Vulnerable too. You know, I do things that I shouldn't do in my life that probably lower my immune system. So it's nice to have a counterbalance to that, at least.
I want to read a quote from Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, who called you the emissary of sonic shamanism, or maybe called you and the Venusians the emissaries of sonic.
That was the Venusian
shamanism. What is sonic shamanism?
Ask Craig Newmark.
What does it mean to you?
Craig was a fan of our band. I mean, we were back in the day. Bill Gates was, you know, into the Venusians. I mean, he at least heard us. I played for, you know, Apple and, you know, Steve Jobs was there and Larry Harvey from Burning Man. I mean, it's like, what is sonic shamanism? I suppose if the music accesses something deep inside of you, you know, and accesses a part of your consciousness, a place of higher consciousness in a sense, maybe perhaps that's its form of shamanism. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do that with any kind of music, I suppose. You know, if you dig Bruce Springsteen and his music accesses something inside of you that makes you feel something that maybe was more difficult to access, some part of your heart, some part of your body, mind, spirit, then hell, that's shamanistic too, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm.
I don't know. You know, I have done a lot of journey work. I've never really studied shamanism per se. I know the term and I know that I've been in it, but I don't know, you know, I can't really define what it is. It means something different for me than it might mean for people who are.
Well, I think it's, yeah, okay, I will. I think for me, it's like certain songs, and it's different times, you know, different songs too. It's not always the same thing, but certain songs at certain times, just, you know, they really get into your soul and your body, and, you know, you just make you dance or just make you feel it. Sometimes make you cry, and sometimes, you know, make you rage and whatever. It's just this whole musical relationship we have, and it's sort of, I'll just define musical shamanism, sonic shamanism. For me, it's like taking the vibrations of the earth and transforming them into a language that we can understand on some level. And I think you do that with words, with music, with your instruments. That's what you're doing. I didn't know if you knew that, but that's what you're doing, Matt Venuti.
I appreciate that. And that's nice to hear things like that. I know that what keeps me going is when I hear people say things like that, like, this music made me happy, or this music struck something, a chord in me. One of the earlier times I heard that was, we were playing at, I forget where it was, South of Market somewhere. It's not important, but it was one of these underground clubs. And we were playing with the new early version of the Venusians. We were playing a song called Time Tunnel Vision. And there's a certain kind of chord progression in that song. And one of the waiters came up to me afterward, and he said, when you played that particular part in that song, it made me feel alive. And I thought to myself, well, that's very interesting. And I listened back to that part on the album, and I realized what that is it's just, it's a combination of a chord progression that comes together with a particular melody, with a particular bass sequence or something, you know, that just hits you in a certain way that opens something up or makes you realize something inside of yourself or makes you feel, period. Mm. And hopefully it's a good feel.
Time tunnel vision, gotta make a decision. Got like a monkey in the middle of a cosmic collision. You think Jupiter took a bad hit? You may be next, better watch it. Who are they? The powers at play. They're digging at the ground for a needle in the hay. You'll find it all inside that twirling light.
So I do strive to be that for people with my music. It's always been a part of me. I've always wanted to have an effect on people in terms of a positive effect with my music. I suppose everybody who's a musician does, whether you're playing punk rock or you're playing classical music, you want to have an effect. Maybe some people want to make people angry. Well, that's at least you're feeling something.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Bring you from apathy into anger is not such a bad move sometimes.
There's nothing worse than being ignored. So, you know, if your music has an effect in any way, that's probably good.
I wanted to touch on also, you had a interesting series of TED Talks performances and a relationship with Thomas Dolby. And did the TED Talk circuit for some time. Can you talk about that?
Well, I never heard of TED until I was, I got a call from Thomas Dolby, who coincidentally enough was one of my earlier musical, I wouldn't say, well, kind of an influence in some ways, but I really loved his music. I was a fan of Frank Zappa growing up. So I liked kind of quirky, you know, unusual, not middle of the road type of stuff. And Thomas's music was like that. It was sophisticated, but it was still kind of had a poppy sense to it that you can, you know, kind of dig and dance along to. And I got a call from him, and he said that he was looking for someone who played the electronic valve instrument, and that he was involved with this organization called TED, which stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. And you know, again, at the time, I never heard of it. I think this was 2006. And he asked me if I'd be interested in playing with him in a small band, which consisted of myself, Michael Mannering, the great bassist. He lives in the Bay Area. And Rochelle Garnier, who is a wonderful multi-instrumentalist in New York City. And so we decided that we were going to gather for 10 days in my house in San Francisco and rehearse there. And we were going to be the TED House Band. And so TED is this conference 4 days out of the year. Early on, there was no TEDx. So it was just one event. And they took luminaries from the world of technology, entertainment, and design and brought them together for this 4 day conference. And it was ridiculous the amount of money it took to go to this conference. Fortunately, I had a free pass because I was playing in the band. And so the music we played was music that Thomas chose. It wasn't his music. It was actually, he wanted to do kind of oddball music from the early 1920s through the 40s, I think it was. And so we rehearsed this music and we played in between each TED Talk. So there'd be the founders of Google and the, you know, the publisher of Wired magazine and, you know, people like that who were giving their talks, and we would play music in between. And it was great because I got to meet people and hang out with people, and it was very casual in a lot of ways. And Chris Anderson, the founder of the curator of TED, heard me playing the electronic valve instrument during the sound check. And he said, "Stop! I want you to play the opening of this conference with that instrument. We're going to scrap what we had in mind." They had this whole video presentation in mind. He said, "I want you to play the electronic valve instrument." So I was like, cool. And I played the electronic valve instrument, just a solo thing that I made up, for the intro to TED 2006, I believe it was. And then, we played in between each, we had about 20 or 30 songs that we had to play. So in between each TED talk, we played a tune. And then Chris Anderson pulled me aside and he said, "Look, I want you to give a your own little mini TED talk about the electronic valve instrument." Now I could sit there and I could play for anybody, but for all of a sudden for me to be doing a TED talk, I was a little intimidated, to say the least. And I had all the way until Saturday to think about it. So, you know, the thing started on Thursday. It was the last day of the conference. And so I got up and I gave a 5-minute talk, kind of demonstration of the electronic valve instrument. And I followed the founders of Google. And I ended it with a kind of a rocky, kind of distorted guitar kind of riff. And then the publisher of Wired magazine followed me and he said, "Geez, I didn't know I was going to be following Jimi Hendrix." So I thought that was kind of a nice compliment.
Nice. Rochelle had a question for you.
What's Rochelle got a question?
She's got a question for you. She wants to know how your time on the road until COVID-19 here, how your time on the road has changed you.
Well, it's made me a lot more, what's the word I want to use here? Malleable in a sense. You know, I kind of became a journeyer in the true sense of the word, of just being able to make things up as I went on. I became kind of an improviser of traveling. I would never like to book too far in advance because you never know what's going to come up. You know, I might get a call to play at a certain, in a festival or someplace that, you know, that I can make. But if I booked myself a year in advance, I wouldn't be able to do that. So, you know, I book myself usually 3 months in advance. And, you know, there's certain elements to being on the road that are just so wonderful because I just love visiting new places and experiencing nature in different places. And there's also a difficult part of it, and that is that, you know, the organizational part of it. So I've become kind of a pretty decent at organizing myself in a sense that I never was too good at before. But just being able to go with the flow a little bit better, I think it's it's taught me that. To any listeners out there, there's a lot of musicians out there like myself who have lost their ability to make the living as they knew it. And we all have to adapt. And, you know, I have to make a new way of adapting. I don't think I'm going to go back on the road anytime soon. And one of the things that I've offered people is to be able to go to my website and download any of the 120 or so songs that I have posted on my website at your own price. You can download literally all, you know, 100 songs for a minimum of I think it's like 99 cents as a minimum. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I take that back. And you can download an album for 99 cents. So you can take like 100 songs for like $10. Go to the website, enjoy some of the music, watch some of the videos. And if you want to download some music, I think you'll enjoy some of the music up there, the Rhythm of Life and a lot of different instrumental music from different genres that I've been through. Please help yourself, enjoy, and hope to see you down the road.
Yeah, cool. Well, it's mattvenuti.com, M-A-T-T-V-E-N-U-T-I.com. And That's great. I love that you're offering your music that way. And yeah, that's, I think, a super important message for you and other artists. You know, everybody's kind of sucking it up right now, but, you know, they talk about the heroes, you know, the doctors and the nurses and the grocery store clerks. And yeah, I mean, they're all right there on the front lines. But
I gave my first tip to a grocery store clerk the other day.
Yeah. Wow. Good for you. Yeah, that's good. That's inspiring. I'm going to remember that. I think I might have to do that. But also artists and musical artists, they're the people we switch on the radio and put in our iPhones. I was going to say iPods, but no one uses those. But in our iPhones, and you know, they're like the soundtrack of our life. And artists, musicians, they should be the ones making the, you know, the billion-dollar salaries, not the people out there destroying the earth. But you know, that's I'll save that.
Well, I think if we were all billionaires, we probably wouldn't find a lot of incentive to do our art. I think.
Okay, well, let's keep it low enough though to have incentives.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind a few hundred thousand, maybe, you know, so I can buy a house.
There you go.
Then again, how would I go on the road then? You know. Anyway, I'll take anything I can get at this point. So.
But yeah, I just get
the point you're making, and I appreciate that, and thank you for.
And I just want to encourage people to visit your website in particular. And I mean, if you're feeling sometimes like I'm feeling when I'm on Facebook or just talking to people, you know, like, God, we just, you know, everyone has their own opinions and, you know, no one really knows what's going on. And, you know, it's all just this kind of big trash heap of digital media, just always, you know, and I'll just shut my phone off, put on Rhythm of Life. And I mean, that just says what we're really here for. You know, we're all in this thing together. I don't care if you are a billionaire or whatever. We're in this together, and it's just a great, uplifting, beautiful song. And you can download it on mattvenuti.com right now for the price of your choice. And $100,000 is okay.
Yeah, I'll take it. Thank you, Todd.
Sure thing. Well, Matt, it's been great to talk to you, and I'll let you know when this thing gets published, where you can listen to it.
Okay.
And appreciate your time today.
My very best to Rochelle, too.
I sure will.
All right.
All right. You take care. Everybody. All right. Bye-bye.
We're all in this together.
All in this together.
All in this.
All in this together.
All in this. Yeah. Rhythm of